Good evening, welcome to, is this part three of Hilchas Matzah? I think it's part three, okay. We're getting closer to not the finish line, but the final laps. It's nice to see so many new faces this evening. Welcome to all the first-time people here. Last week we talked about Muktzah Machmas Gufo. We said that anything that is not considered a utensil, a kli, something with a defined purpose, that would be very muktzah. You can't move it, even if you need the location that it's sitting in, even if you want to use it for an alternate use. We gave some examples. Dirt, rocks, sticks, leaves. We talked about money. Money is not a utensil. There's nothing you could really do with a body of the money. Of course, you could do lots of good things with money, but not with the physical blob of metal or of paper. A bar of soap is, again, you don't use the bar of soap and do something with it. You do use it. You employ it, but you don't use it as a utensil to do an act with it. Plants are muktzah machmas gufo. And again, this category of muktzah machmas gufo is something that we do not move for any circumstance, even if you need the place that it's sitting on, even if you want to use it for an alternate use, as opposed to things that are kalim, that are utensils that you want to use for some alternate use, like the hammer to break the coconut, like the cell phone to use as a paperweight, like the umbrella that you want to get something down from the top shelf or scratch your back with. Those are all okay, because those are utensils with uses, albeit for other purposes. So you're allowed to use them for non-designated purposes, all that you could just make up as you go. And of course, if you need the location of that hammer because it's in your chair, or you need the cell phone is on your pillow, you could lift up the cell phone with your hand, move it to wherever you want, and go to sleep. That was last week. We left off with the very exciting topic about pets. What is the status of a pet? What do you do with an animal? You hug it. What do you do with it? Can I take the animal and dig something with it? Can I take the animal and do an act or accomplish something with it? Not really. I could hook it up so it does something. Hold on one second. So for that reason, since animals are not kalim, they're not utensils, and you can't really do something with animals are going to be muktzah machmas gufo, which again is the severe level of muktzah. That means that you cannot move it even if you want to use the location it's at. Let's say there's a dog sitting on your chair. You're not going to be able to move the dog off your chair. If there's a hammer on the chair, you could lift off the hammer with your bare hands, without a shinui. If there's a cell phone, you could lift off the cell phone with your bare hands. An animal and a rock and a dollar bill, you wouldn't be able to lift off with your hands. Let me share it to you just so you don't think some right-wing, fanatical... I'll read to you just lines of Shulchan Aruch. We're not even going to get into any post-kim, just the Shulchan Aruch itself. Asur l'taltel behema. You're not permitted to handle an animal, chaya, an undomesticated animal, a wild animal, v'of, or a bird. Says the Mishnah Brura, this is in Simon Shin Ches, 308, Sif Lamed Tes, 39. 308, 39. Why can you move it, says the Mishnah Brura? Because they're bichlal muktzah, they're included in the category of muktzah. Ke'etzim v'avanim, just like sticks and stones. Why? What's the reason for that? Deha, because lo chazu. That's Aramaic for re'uyim. They're not worthy. They're not worthy of any use. They're not worthy to do anything with. They're not purposeful. Now, you'll ask me a question. But wait a second. What happens if I don't take out my dog or my parrot? What is my parrot going to do in the house? Make it messy. What's my dog going to do in the house if I don't take it outside? Make it very messy and smelly. So I'm going to suffer a hefsin, I'm going to suffer a loss. Can I move muktzah to prevent a loss? Let's take a vote. Who says I can move muktzah to prevent a loss? Who says I can't move muktzah to prevent a loss? Who doesn't say? Most of us. Okay, says the Mishnah Brura. He gives a different example. Not talking about dirty things. What happens with a bird flying around your house? Let's say Afilu im yachol hagia lehefsed. Even if you'll arrive to a loss through these animals that are walking around freely in your house, kagon, for example, shehaof poreach al gabei hakelim, you just set the table with beautiful china, crystal, decanters, goblets, and you have a little parrot, you know, sort of kamikaze flying straight across the dining room table, shattering everything. Okay, sorry. Afilu hachi, even so, asur letafsein biyadayim. You're not permitted to grab them with your hands. What if it's a domesticated animal? It's your pet. You've had Shirley for 12 years. Not talking about your younger sister. Nevertheless, it's still going to be mukta, and you're not going to be able to move it. So that causes us to have a very significant problem, because if we say that you have to be, let me rephrase that, if we say that you even have to suffer a loss, a hefsid, for mukta, and animals, including pets that you have for 12 years, are mukta, so if we just do the math, 2 plus 2 equals 4, that means I should not be able to take my dog outside, because even though it's going to make a mess in my house. That's what ought to come out if we would stop here. But don't go outside yet. Let's continue to the next se'if in the Shulchan Aruch, se'if Mem. Kol behema chayavav, any animal, wild animal, or bird, midadim oto bechatzer. As long as you're in a chatzer, a place that there is an erev, you're allowed to be midadeh. What's ledadeid? To waddle. You can't lift the animal off the ground, but you could sort of take it by its shoulders, take it by its arms, and waddle it such that you're not lifting it off the ground. Dehainu explains the Shulchan Aruch, that means to say, she'ochez b'tzavaran, you grab them by the neck or the shoulders, uvitzdadim, by the sides, umolichan, and you walk with them, to waddle an animal. If, and these three words are the key words that will open up the halachas for people who have pets, im tzrichim haba'al chayim lekach, if the animal needs it. And that's the key line. When are you allowed to move animals, again, not lifting them up off the ground, but moving them, waddling them, shifting them, pushing them, pulling them, if they need it? What's the difference between if you need it and if they need it? If you need it, you're going to suffer loss. Well, for the halachas of mukta, you have to be willing to suffer a loss. If it's a very significant loss, a really big loss, thousands of dollars, then you call up a rabbi. Not on Shabbos, you call him Erev Shabbos, so you run to his house. And then he tells you what to do with hefsed gadol, hefsed merubeh. That's a different kind of halacha, different rules for significant losses, if you're dealing with these turim that are only derabanan. But regular, normal losses are asur, even for a derabanan, like mukta. However, here it's not just a question of a loss. Here's a question that the animal needs it. What halacha do we know in the Torah? Yes, it's a din d'oraisa that relates to animals' needs. What? Tzar Baal Echaim. There's machlokas in the Gemara, I think in Bava Metzia or in Shabbos, whether Tzar Baal Echaim is midrabanan or midoraisa. And we paskin that our concern not to inflict pain on animals is midoraisa. Midoraisa. The concern that we have that animals should not suffer is an iser d'oraisa. That means when I was a little boy and I used to cut off the tails of salamanders. You don't have any brothers? I'm sure you've seen this before. Or perhaps more for those of you who didn't go to camp and didn't have salamanders to cut off their tails. You had daddy long legs. Okay, too many people are smiling, so I'm not going to go any further. You know what I'm talking about. So that is an iser d'oraisa. Yes, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it in public, but there were children who did such things. That's an iser d'oraisa, presumably. Where do we learn the iser d'oraisa from? Which pasuk in the Torah says you can't cause unnecessary harm to an animal? Excellent, fabulous, yes. The Torah says that you're not allowed to let your neighbor's donkey, you know, be, what's the word? Falling under its heavy packages, you have to help the donkey, help your even your enemy, help the packages off the donkey so it doesn't fall down. I mean, you have to be worried for the welfare of your donkey, of your friend's donkey. So for Tzar Baalei Chayim, you are permitted to move an animal, not lift an animal, but to move, push, pull, waddle, So therefore, if any of you have a dog or a cat and it has to go be taken outside to go to the bathroom, and for example, not being able to go to the bathroom is very significantly tzar balei chayim, as any of you who have been stuck in some situation that you couldn't leave even though you very much wanted to, for biological reasons, and that's tzar balei chayim. So you would be permitted to pull it, to push it, to waddle your animal, but not lift it up and take it outside. Again, we're talking within an erev. If there's no erev, that's a whole different story. I don't actually know the halacha. I didn't work on that sugya. That is a special kula for tzar bali chayim, which includes, of course, being able to go to the bathroom. Questions? You could push it, you're saying you're only allowed to move it for tzar bali chayim purpose. Right, that which you could push and pull it is for tzar bali chayim. So I assume you could stand up and it will... Cats are good like that.
Can you do that, but you're lifting the cat and stand up?
You're standing up. The cat could do it at once. I guess it'd be different if like a goldfish in a bowl sat himself down on your lap. That would be a little messier, a little more painful. Yes. Excellent question. Let's make it an even stronger question. What about a seeing eye dog? A seeing eye dog, I would say, is an incredible, incredible need for the person, no question about that. What would be the halacha of a seeing eye dog? That, you're saying, animal. The whole point of this isser is that there's no use to an animal. But if I use this animal as my GPS, as my walker man, as my cane, as my everything, so maybe the whole svaro that makes it muktzeh ma'achmas gufo wouldn't apply. I'm just rambling. That's what I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I could hear reason to assume that a seeing eye dog would be different. A guard dog, you don't use it actively, like you don't take it as utensil. Like when I mean utensil, I mean you take the item in your hands and you fulfill a task with it. It's true that guard dogs have a job, have a purpose, but I don't think you take it in your hands as a utensil and complete a task with it. Seeing eye dogs, that might be very different. I actually don't know. I'm sure it's been discussed. There's actually a sefer that was put out for halachas of people who are blind, and I'm sure it'd be in that sefer, but it's an excellent question. Yes? Gufa, that is correct. A stick is muktzeh ma'achmas gufa, correct. Not a broom, but a stick. That's a cane. A cane is a utensil. Even if it doesn't have that hook at the end, that handle at the end, a tapping cane is a utensil, it's not a stick. It's a utensil, it's a kli, shemlachto laheter, and you can move it as long as you need to. Yes, except for the fact that in general dogs have been discussed as being muktzeh. They're not kalim, meaning a stick is a kli. So we have to define it. Is a kli? It's a kli shemlata leheter leisser. We know that it's a kli. A dog is just not a kli. Once it's not a kli, it's harder to give it a name that's mutter if we know that things that are not kalim, other than food and books, to say that they're mutter if they're not kalim. Yes. Excellent question. Could I pet a dog on Shabbos? So I would assume if it's not, let's say there's no fluffy hair, because then you're moving the fluffy hair, but if you're just petting the back of your parakeet, right? Why are you laughing? My father had one. A parrot. It would sit on his shoulders and they drink coffee together, like this, sort of perched right here, they'd sort of share their coffee. That's my father. He teaches here. So if you want to pet the bat, you're not going to move any of the feathers. You're not moving it. So if you're not moving it, you're right. Muktzeh is not prohibited to touch. It's prohibited to move. That was the first thing we said in this series, right? So, I'm sorry? But I don't think you're moving them. You're just, it's me touching the nerves, and the nerves are making it feel whatever, and it's deciding to fly or... I don't think the pressure that you're applying is actually moving it. You're just make it feel uncomfortable. That's what I would think. Most animals that have fur, you're probably going to be moving a little bit of the fur as you do it. I guess it depends on the situation. Any questions about animals, pets? Yes?
So no petting
animals. If it has a lot of fur, it sounds like it's a problem. If it's something that you think might be no good, please send me a text message and I'll investigate further. But based on what we've seen, you know, simply, if something will be moved, it will be problematic. Unless it's for Tzar Bali Chaim. If you know that your animal is very, I don't know, if it's very scared or anxious and you're trying to calm it down, that one could perhaps argue that's like Tzar Bali Chaim if you don't. It's hard to say. That would be hard to say that, but you could hear somebody going in that direction. That wouldn't be so simple to say. Any other questions on animals and pets? Yeah. Why can you walk your little brother? I guess people have purpose. I guess people are big animals. That's actually a very interesting question. And this is a very serious question that the poskim do discuss. Is there a din of tzar bali chayim for people? Okay? Let's figure out a scenario. We don't have to mention any specific reasons why. Let's say you figure out there's a person to whom v'ahavta l'recha kamocha doesn't apply. Whatever such a scenario would be. Fine. So there's no mitzvah to love them as you love yourself. No mitzvah do chesed for such a person. Let's say there is such a person that we could figure out halachically who that person would be. And does that mean that you could therefore see them in pain or cause them pain? So the question does Tzar Bali Chaim apply only to animals or to people as well? So the Rashba was asked this question. And what did he say? I think he says it certainly ought to apply to people. People are no less than animals. So even if there's no mitzvah of, let's say, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, we still have to be concerned with, you know, just humanity not suffering. I think the Rashba said that. But I think the answer to your question is that people are not, you're right, they're not a kli, but that's not because they're lower than a kli, it's because they're higher than a kli. Animals, as Mishnah Berurah said, they're low chazer, they don't do anything. People do things. So they're something. Okay? Terrific. So we finished animals. And let's go to the next category of mukta machmas gufo. Again, when we're looking for things that are mukta machmas gufo, we're looking for things that are just, they're not kalim, they're not utensils, they're sort of just there. They just exist. I might use it for my uses, but not as a tool to do something with. And of course, the rule for all these things that are mukta machmas gufo, the rule for that is that I can't move it for any purpose, even if I need the location, even if I want to use it for an alternate use. So again, a stick I cannot scratch my back with, an umbrella, a cell phone I can scratch my back with. Next category of things that are within mukta machmas gufo are broken items. Let's say you have a chair. Chair is a klishim lach to leheter. As long as I need, I could move this chair wherever I want, of course. What happens when the leg breaks off that chair? So that leg, is it mukta or is it not mukta? The answer is, what do you do with the leg of a chair? Nothing. Therefore, what is it? Mukta, machmas gufo. That means even if that leg of a chair is sitting on my couch or my dining room table and I want to put down my plate, I can't. I can't put my plate there. I can't use that location. I can't use that stick that was from the bottom of my chair to scratch my back, even though my cell phone or my umbrella I could use to scratch my back. Another example, a broken tool. Let's say you have a hammer. Well, yeah, let's talk about a hammer. A hammer, if it's a regular hammer, you can move it if you need the location. You can move it if you want to break a coconut. But let's say it's a broken hammer. It's the head of the hammer and the handle of the hammer break off one from another. So all of a sudden, it's a broken hammer. It's not a kli anymore. It became mukta machmas gufo, and I'm not allowed to use it, neither for its location, nor for an alternate use. Wow. I always thought the angels were dancing when I taught Torah. Now we all know that it's true. A broken toy. You have a broken toy. Let's think of a toy that breaks. What's an example of a toy that breaks? A doll arm. So unless your little brother or sister enjoy playing surgeon and they use their doll arms as part of their very elaborate surgery models, that's a different situation. But under normal circumstances, the arm of a doll or any other broken toy would also be mukta machmas gufo and cannot be used. Mamash mukta. And finally, let's say you have a piece of glass or a bowl. This does happen. And this is probably one of the most common applications. Let's say you're at the dining room table. This past week, we were sitting at the dining room table and we had plates. Usually, often we use plastic. This week we used real plates. And my little daughter was holding a metal, like a coast sort of. Not silver, but a metal, gavia for Kiddush. And she was banging. And we said once, stop banging. We said twice, stop banging. We said three times, stop banging. What happened? Shattered. So the glass shattered. Not glass, the ceramic, whatever kind of plate it was. So that's a shattered kli. Shattered kli is mukta machmas gufo and cannot be moved off that table, even if I need to sit there, even if I want to eat there. Of course, I know you're all thinking, but it's dangerous, somebody could cut themselves on it. That's true. The Ramah right over there, when it talks about broken kelim, the Ramah says, of course, if it's something that could damage a person, this is in Shin Ches 308, Se'if Vav, the Mishnah Berurah, the Ramah, of course, at the end of that, if adds, if it's something that breaks in a place that it could be mazik, that it can damage, cause bodily harm to an individual. Kigon, for example, zichuchit, glass, shenishbara al hashulchan, that broke on the table, as happened this Shabbos. O b'makom shaholchin, or that broke in the place where people walk. Mutar l'taltel hashvarim, you are permitted to handle the broken pieces, meaning with your hands, kedei lefanotan, to remove them, shelo yuz kubahem, so that people be not damaged by them. That is something that's a little bit complicated. We'll hopefully talk about it in either next week or 2 weeks from now. But generally, if there are a few people that could get hurt from such a thing, it's not just like if they're all adults around the table, and there are no kids around, and it's not something that somebody will inadvertently get hurt, and everyone could just avoid it, you probably shouldn't lift it off with your bare hands. If there are kids around, or there are so many people that it's hard to, be careful to avoid, then you could lift it up with your bare hands and remove it. Of course, there will be other ways that we'll have to talk about when we get up to that section of Mukta, again, probably in 2 weeks, that I might be able to move it off indirectly, let's say with a broom onto a dustpan, but that's not for right now. Now we're just talking about what is Mukta. Later we'll talk about how can I move Mukta. Questions? Fabulous question. Excellent, excellent question. The Gemara talks about that. The Shulchan Aruch talks about that. What about a kli that's broken, but it can still be used? It's actually very complicated. The question is a great question. The answer is a very difficult answer. In the olden days, the Gemara uses a phrase that is a little bit hard to apply nowadays. The Gemara assumes that any kli that breaks could be used latzur al pi tzlichito, tzlichuto, to cover the mouth of a bottle. Picture, they didn't have bottle caps. They didn't have corks. So I had to cover my bottles. So any sort of curved item or flat item, piece of glass that breaks, as long as it's bigger than, let's say, a quarter or the size of a bottle cap, as long as it's a little bigger than the width of a bottle cap, you could use practically any broken plate or bowl to just sit on top of your bottle to keep stuff from falling in and to keep, bees from getting into your bottle. So in the olden days where they had that use, those uses for broken kalim, you would be permitted to handle those, again, those larger chunks of broken glass or broken pottery. However, I think Rav Moshe Feinstein says that we don't work like that. We don't use shards of pottery or glass to cover our bottles. In fact, we came up with this brilliant idea called manufacturing bottle caps. Therefore, we don't have that opportunity. However, what you're saying is still applicable. If you can, let's say you have a serving dish, and it breaks in half. So until now, it held 20 cookies. Well, half of a serving dish that held 20 cookies holds 10 cookies. That won't be mukta, because of what you just said. The smaller shards that cannot hold cookies will be mukta. Excellent question. Excellent point. Yes. Terrific. Okay. Any other questions about? Yes, Alishana. Well, if you follow that logic, it would be a heter.
Right, because if it was full before Shabbos.
Yeah, so it works in the opposite way. Something that's mukta before Shabbos, even though on Shabbos it became okay, it will still remain in its iser will still remain intact. I'll give you a great example based on what we just learned. We talked about an animal. Let's say a dog. My dog is mukta. Let's say I have a dog bed. Those of us who really love our dogs buy our dogs a bed, right? Okay, so I have a dog bed. My dog had a big Erev Shabbos potato kugel snack. By the Hasidim, they all eat potato kugel Erev Shabbos. Any of you have Hasidish ants? Potato kugel Erev Shabbos? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. Fine. So it ate a lot of potato kugel Erev Shabbos, and it takes a nap during Ben Hashmashos, during the time between Shkia and Tzeis HaKochavim, a Friday afternoon. It's just lying on that bed. And then on Shabbos, it comes prancing around, and it comes joins you for the Seuda. And now you want to move that dog bed to the dog's bedroom on Shabbos. However, based on what you just said, Elishava, that anything that was mukta during the incoming of Shabbos, during the duration of Ben Hashmashos, even if the thing that made it mukta goes away, the dog goes off it, that bed is going to remain a basis and retain its status of mukta, since the dog was sitting on it for all of Shabbos, even though the dog is no longer there. So that will be an application of what you said. We're not going to talk about that, certainly not today. I don't even know if we'll talk how much we'll talk about buses, because it's a little complicated. We'll see, maybe in 2 weeks we might get to it. We'll see. Okay, let's talk about another application of broken items. I have a torn piece of clothing. So is a torn piece of clothing, based on what you said earlier, is it usable for other uses? Yeah, a rag, 100%. I think so. All torn clothing, theoretically, should be mutter, should not be mukta, because they could all be used as a rag. Just a great story that I have. I was once going on a date in Toronto. Anyone here from Toronto? What? Not really. You're not really from Toronto. You're from Toronto for like the past 3 months. Okay. So I don't even know if you ever made it to the Science Museum in Toronto. Come on, everyone there. Okay, so I was there on a date, and they had this, they wanted you to sort of simulate, sort of feel what handicapped people have to experience. So they have these wheelchairs that you could sort of race one another with in. I mean, you don't really get anywhere. So I was, I guess, wearing a suit jacket, and I was determined to beat whoever I was racing. And as I was sort of moving my arms in a circular motion as quickly as I could, my suit jacket, slid straight down the side, Baruch Hashem, my jacket, and I lost my suit jacket on that fateful day in Toronto, and I guess that's why we didn't get married. But if that would have happened on Shabbos, the suit jacket would not be mukta. Fine. Next case. What about you're wearing high heels, and your heel breaks off? Does this ever happen? Okay, it's never happened to me, for more than one reason. So, could you have any other use with that broken heel? No, that broken heel is mukta. Do you have any other use for that shoe?
Yes, fixed.
Oh, you can get it fixed. That's going to make life very complicated. Meaning, on Shabbos, there's no permitted, no use shall heter. You're saying you could hold it, you could wear it. Okay, I'll leave that to discuss among yourselves. I'll stay out of this. I don't know the mitzvahs. Okay, broken glasses. So that depends on how the glasses broke. Let's say, and this I think has happened to me, another story. When they first came out with the bendable, titanium bendable glasses, I was in about 11th grade. So please don't like Wikipedia or Google like, when did bendable titanium glass, because I can figure out how old I am. So they're unbreakable titanium bendable glasses. And they're so unbreakable that they come with a warranty that if it ever breaks, you get a new one for free. So right after it came out, there was one guy in my class who got them and was wearing them. And we were playing basketball in the Max Stern Athletic Center, probably illegally because we were in high school, but we were tall. So we looked like we were college students. And he went up for the shot, and my hand went down to block his shot. My forearm crossed the bridge of his nose. And I broke the unbreakable titanium glasses. So now, let's let's say we would do this on Shabbos. Of course, I wouldn't play basketball on Shabbos, not because it's... Is it also to play basketball on Shabbos? Is it mutter? Is it good? It's not in the spirit. Okay, so we'll talk about that maybe in a few minutes, if I remember. Let's talk about the glasses, at least. Let's say we were doing it on Shabbos, and that's why Hashem made those glasses break. So, could I use those glasses for anything? Well, if they... What? Ooh, that's going to make life a little bit more usser. But let's put that aside. If I could take, let's say, I don't want to demonstrate, but let's say I break this in half and I have one half and the other half, so I could still, you know, use one lens to, you know, see with that half or the other side for that half. That would be a permitted, you know, that would be a practical use that I would be able to use those glasses. That would not be muktzah. If, however, the both lenses popped out of my glasses or both lenses broke, shattered, God forbid, so that would, my glasses are not usable, and those would be muktzah. So you sort of have, if one, what is it called, in the temple, that's a temple? This thing is called a temple? Yes? Optometrist. A resident optometrist, that's a temple, right? Thank you. Any opticians? Okay, just one optometrist. So you're the king here. So if one temple falls off, I could still wear glasses if one temple of the glasses fell off, right? So that, those guys are not muktzah. If both fall off, well, I guess I could still hold it. So it really depends on how the glasses break. But a lot of situations, it won't be muktzah. That piece is muktzah. Excellent. Yes, that piece will definitely be muktzah because it has no permitted use as is. Yes. Even though I could use it to scratch my back, that's not its use. Yeah. No. No. We'll talk about that in maybe in. Let's see if we have time in 10 minutes to talk about that. Doorknob that falls off. This happens. Doorknob falls off. Doorknob is muktzah machmas gufo. That means even if I want to use it for some permitted use, like throwing it at my roommate, or like scratching my back, or it's in my way, or something like that, a doorknob will be muktzah machmas gufo. That's the end of broken items. Questions? That's a good question. I was wondering about that as I was sort of preparing this shiur. Let's say the fact that it's easy might not be the important thing. Let's say it happens like every other day, which we all have that in our, you know, at some point in our life, we were all in a situation that we had a doorknob that came off every other day. And so it's not really, how can you say that's binyan, you're building on Shabbos, if I like just slip it on and off all the time? So I don't know, I have to look into that. I don't know. I was bought when I saw this halacha, I was like, wait a second, I used to do that all the time. Yes. Sorry? A makom patish as opposed to binyan, I hear that. That could be, I don't know the sugya. Could be. Excellent question. I don't know so much about broken jewelry, in all honesty. Let's try it out. Let's see what we could do. Okay. Let's say I have an earring. And an earring has two pieces, I understand, right? Some do. I have, you know, let's say I have a pearl earring. I have the pearl, stud, got it, and the thing that goes, what?
Post.
That's it, okay, fine, if you say so. I have a post and a stud, that's good. No, that's the, no, that, what's that goes behind? Whatever it is, two parts. And one of them breaks. So the other one, is it not useful anymore? Still have the same use. If they're two parts, they still have the same use as before. I don't know if that would be usher. What? I hear that. Okay, let's say I have a necklace that just like the clasp breaks. You can't use it as a necklace anymore. It sounds like a broken kli. I would say that might be muktzah machmas gufo. That's not so good, right? Because it's expensive. And you got it for your bas mitzvah from your grandmother. That's not good. So we have to figure out a heter for the broken necklace. Heter for a broken necklace. So we said clothing that tears. That's okay. You can use it for a rag. You can't use this for a rag. Somebody could text me later and we'll see if we could find a heter for that, because that's important. What other jewelry is there? Bracelet, same situation. watch. So watch is a little easier, because even if the watch doesn't work, it's still wear. But if the band breaks, you can still use it to tell time, so you're usually okay with the watch. Okay, yeah. Send me a text message. I'm scared to say that because that's something that has very practical and financial applications. So let's think about that a little more before we just say no.
What about if the earring doesn't break, but let's say one of the stones falls
in? Is there more than one stone on it?
Yeah.
So you could wear it for the other stones.
Right.
It looks nice. Doesn't look as nice. Oh, the stone itself. Stone is very much machon skufo. Yeah, diamonds, my friend. Diamonds, your very best friends, right? Can you imagine that your best friend could be Muktzah? Wow, well, my best friend is a dog. And we decided dogs are Muktzah, so it's only fair that your best friends ought to be Muktzah also, you know, just to keep the playing ground, the playing field level. Yes, diamonds are just stones. You know, it sounds anticlimactic, but they're stones, nothing more. They are Muktzah. If they're part of a piece of jewelry, so they suddenly became clothing. Clothing is never Muktzah. Yes? So it came to your hand beheter. That's excellent, because that's probably often how it happens. Because while you're handling it, something breaks. Once it's in your hand beheter, so then I have to check. Because we said that if it's a klishim lach to iser, like a cell phone, once it's in your hand, you could carry it wherever you want. But you're asking, does that apply even to things that are more severely muktzah, like muktzah machmas gufo? Do we also have the leniency of once it's in your hand, to take it wherever you want? I know that, well, once it's in your pocket, it's not in your hand. It's a little less severe. It's a bus, you know, it's tiltum hatzad as it is. I don't recall. I know it's machloka, it's gra, and somebody or other, Magen Avraham. I don't remember who says what or what they say. I don't remember. So that we'll have to follow up. If someone can text me that. Broken klishim lach telegufo in your hand, can you continue carrying it? Okay, let's go on to the next application. Let's say I have something that was thrown in the garbage, but it wasn't broken. What's an example of something that wasn't broken, but you threw in the garbage? No, you don't want to. No, I'm telling you that you wanted to throw it in your garbage. Like, let's say you're going through your scarf, you're looking for your Shabbos scarf, and you notice this scarf that you wore in, like, 7th grade, and you're aghast to even realize that you own it, and it brings back the most horrible memories, so you quickly throw that scarf in the garbage. Okay? Is the fact that you threw it in the garbage sufficient to make it muktzah? After all, if we go back 3 weeks, what does the word muktzah mean? Muktzah means I put it out of my, I designated it not for my use. I pushed it away from myself. So by throwing it out in the garbage, does that make it like I'm pushing it away? Am I being makteh, that scarf, by throwing it in the garbage? Well, it's not going to be hefker if it's still in my apartment. To be hefker, it has to sort of be like somewhat public, or at least available for public. What do you say? That is correct. That is what the halacha is, that even though you decided you don't use it, you didn't make it a useless item. Therefore, if you threw out your scarf, one person's garbage is another person's treasure. Thank you. So I happen to think that scarf is very beautiful, so it didn't become muktzah by virtue of the fact that you threw it out. However, let's say the scarf ripped. If the scarf ripped, then I think it will become muktzah by you throwing it out. Even though when the scarf was ripped, we said it's not muktzah because you could use it for another purpose. But if it was broken, if a kli was broken, torn, broken, plus it was discarded, that combination will make it muktzah. So if I have a plate, that's a half a plate, and it can't hold 20 cookies like it used to hold, it only holds 10 cookies, but it's broken, and I threw it out, those two things together will make it usher for you to come and say, oh, I do want it for my 10 cookies, then it will become muktzah. Yes?
Just to clarify, so when you think about muktzah, it's
It depends regarding what you asked that question. No, what I meant by that was just to illustrate that if an item is whole, if the utensil is complete, so throwing it out is not sufficient to make it muktzah. I was just explaining why that could be. If something is a complete utensil, your throwing it out doesn't change its halachic status. But if it's broken, that you threw out, so even if somebody else could figure a way to use it, it will still be muktzah. Okay? Yeah. If you have a garbage that is, a lot of garbage is not muktzah, right? Dirty plates, they're very dirty maybe, but like paper plates that you throw in the garbage are not necessarily muktzah. Food that you don't want to eat anymore, the leftovers of your chicken, and even the skin, and even the chicken bones are probably not muktzah. Dogs would eat it. So most of your garbage is probably not muktzah. If you tell me your garbage is all banana peels, orange peels, and gari nim shells, yes, it will be muktzah. And if you dropped, you know, a silver fork on the bottom, could you reach through? Maybe not. So just don't throw it outside yet. But most garbages are not going to be, our garbage is not, you know, necessarily muktzah garbage. Okay, let's talk about a very important application, very important, probably the most important application, halacha lemaisa, of muktzah machmas gufo. Again, this severe category of muktzah, you can't move for anything. Let's talk about inedible foods. Tell me an example, please, of a food that in its current state is not edible. You tell that to me. Give me some examples and I'll tell you that it's muktzah. Go ahead. What? What? Raw chicken is muktzah. What? Frozen meat is muktzah. What? That is going to be muktzah. That might be muktzah for other reasons also, but tell me something that has good use and you do want it, and it's still going to be muktzah. Flour is muktzah. Sugar won't be, because sugar is edible as it is. But flour is unedible unless you do something with it, is muktzah. What else do we got? Actually, excellent question. Thank you. Eggs is not muktzah. Why? Does anyone's father here drink raw eggs? Anyone's father a chazan? Right, if you gurgle eggs or something, or you drink eggs before, chazanim used to eat raw eggs because it helps make their voices something. I'm not sure exactly what. Okay, let's start with this. Let's start with peels. Apple peels, are they muktzah? I eat them. I eat my kids because they don't eat the peels. I have to peel it off and I don't want to throw it out, so I eat the peels. Kiwi peels. Kiwi peels are edible, my friend. You could eat the kiwi peels. Just wash your kiwis. However, shells, like eggshells or gari nim, you know, sunflower seed shells, those are not edible. And when I say edible, I mean edible by an animal. They are not even edible by an animal, and therefore they will be muktzah. Pits. So a pear pit or an apple pit you could actually eat. The Mishnah Berurah says that. Try it. And then say, I'm hereby fulfilling the Mishnah Berurah. No, not really. Avocado pits, stay away from their choking hazard. Cherry pits actually are poisonous. I did a report on poisons in high school, and I was excited to learn that cherry pits are poisonous. I also learned that any substance in the taken too much of, even water, could be poisonous if you have too much of it in your body. But like in terms of intensely poisonous, yes, cherry pits are poison, so be careful when you eat cherries. I don't mean to scare you all, but still. Pits that are not edible are muktzah. Of course, if they don't have any flesh of fruits attached to it. So a plum pit, a peach pit is muktzah. Yeah. That's true. If you want to keep the avocado pit so that you could keep your avocado green and it doesn't turn brown. That's a good point. That's a very good point. It's still not a kli. So I would say don't separate it from your... I would say leave a little bit of avocado on your avocado pit so that it won't become muktzah. Because once it becomes muktzah, even though you want to use it for something useful, and to making the guacamole and avocado stay green is significant, is useful. But I'm just scared once it becomes purely clear of any food attached to it, It's just not a kli anymore. It's not a food anymore. You want to do something good with it, but it's still, it's no different than wanting to use a stick to hit my friend who needs a good hitting. But that's aser. So I want to use this avocado pick to keep my avocado green. That should be equally problematic. So leave a little bit of avocado attached to it. Good point. Yes. Of course. Excellent question. I hear that. I have to think about it. It's a good point. I don't know the answer. Yes?
What happens if you don't put straight in the garbage? Like, you can put the cup in the cup and then the cup in the garbage, or an apple or a peach. Maybe it's very good.
Peach, yes.
And I actually clean off the pit of
all the stuff, right?
Holding it.
Right. So and you want to put it on the plate.
All of a sudden, as I finish the last bite.
Right. So you just suggest that maybe you can't once it's in your hand, then I have to double check, but once you put it down on the plate, it will be muktzah. And then we'll have to talk about how to clear the plate. You're right there. What happens all the time is the stem of the grapes, right? That's like a piece of wood. It's a piece of wood. So that's muktzah right now. Are you going to be able to move that plate? So what I would do is I would get something that's a tiny bit edible and leave it on the plate. So whenever I eat sunflower seeds on Friday night, which I definitely do very often, because that's the way I stay awake and do my Shtayim Mikra, so I have a big bowl of sunflower shells. I leave one whole sunflower seed in that bowl. So now let's think about mathematically what's in this bowl. Lots of sunflower seed shells and one sunflower seed. Now how much is 500 sunflower seed shells, say that quickly, sunflower seed shells worth? Zero. How much is one sunflower worth? A penny. So now, what's the more significant thing in this bowl? The sunflower seed. So the whole bowl could be carried. So practically, that's what I do. And again, we'll talk about how to move muktzah. That's not for now. That will be next week or in 2 weeks. But that's what I do. I make my sunflowers. I take my bowl. I put one sunflower seed in it. Then I put all the shells in it. And since there is something shel heter in there, I can move it all around all I want. And again, if you have a plate full of eggshells and pits and orange peels, which are not edible, and banana peels, which are not edible, but there's a little bit of actual food on it, on that plate, you could take the plate and put it wherever you want because that plate is carrying something significant along with the muktzah items. Yes. I would say that's putting it to good use. The amount that you put in, say if you throw out like a whole big thing because that's not right, but if you're throwing out a tiny, you know, a quarter of a blueberry, which is sufficient, you know, or one sunflower, you know, in my mind, throwing out one sunflower seed is well worth the price of not having a pile of sunflower seeds on my table for the rest of Shabbos. That's my, you know. Okay, let's finish off just with a few more food items. Raw potatoes, rice, raw rice, raw barley, raw noodles, macaroni, our muktzah. Now this is super nogea halacha lamaisa. Picture in your mind's eye right now, the pantry in your kitchens. And you know where the Cheerios are? The new box that you want to open, in the back. And what's between you and the Cheerios? The noodles. So what do you automatically do? You reach your hand in, you push aside the noodles, and you get to the Cheerios. That is aser. Completely. On Shabbos, even though it's obstructing your way, you need the makom. Even though it is letzorech makomo, that is not okay because muktzah machmas gufa, which these noodles are, they have no purpose on Shabbos and they're not a kli. It is completely muktzah. You cannot move them with your hand. If you want to get your elbow in that pantry, that will be fine, but that we'll talk about next week. But you're not allowed to move out of the way your noodles, your macaroni, your raw potatoes. Let's say you have a bin of potatoes. And you want to get to the onion on the bottom. You cannot lift up that potato. You cannot reach through those potatoes to get to your onions on the bottom. Because raw potatoes are muktzah. Raw onions are not because people eat raw onions. Similarly, when you set up your freezer on Friday and you have your challah or your cake or your ices or your sorbet upon which you have a piece of frozen chicken, you're in trouble. I mean raw chicken. If it's cooked chicken, frozen, that's okay. That's edible. Just let it thaw out. But if you have raw chicken on top of your sorbet or your ice cream, you can't remove that meat. You can't remove that frozen raw meat, raw chicken, to get to your sorbet. Another, and we'll finish off with this, with these last examples. Let's say you have cake mixes, you know, Duncan Hines fudge brownie mix or Jell-O mix, which you can't do on Shabbos. Could you do Jell-O on Shabbos? We'll talk about that another time, I'm not sure. Let's say Duncan Hines cake mix, you cannot move that on Shabbos. It's in your way to get to the Cheerios. I'm sorry, you cannot move it with your hand to reach to the Cheerios behind them. Similarly, medicines that won't be used, again, if you have a headache, you could take medicine if it's a bad headache. If it's medicine that won't be used on Shabbos, again, they're not for serious diseases, they're not because no one in your family, yourself included, is significantly ill that will need any of those medicines, those will be muktzah. Cosmetics that cannot be applied on Shabbos, like a lipstick or a lip gloss, I think, whatever other cosmetic, a pencil, that, right? Help me, please. Eyeliner, right? That's what it is? Right. That's the pencil? Okay. And whatever other materials that you probably know bit better than I that cannot be applied on Shabbos. I'm not saying if you can or can't. I don't really... those things that cannot be applied on Shabbos, those will also be muktzah machmas gufo, unless then you have a little pouch that has that and a... Could you put on blush on Shabbos? I see different faces not moving in different directions, some up and down, some side. Whatever, let's say there's something else in your pouch that you could use on Shabbos. So you're not going to be able to handle that, you put your hand in that pouch to maneuver the things in them to get to the thing that is mutter. We'll just finish with this, but anything that we said raw eggs could be moved on Shabbos. And finally, anything that's cooked, even though it's frozen, it can be moved on Shabbos. Question, and this we'll finish. No, we'll finish with the question, then I'll take personal questions, but you know, specific questions afterwards. Let's say you have cooked food, frozen, but that's okay. But it's designated specifically for the Sheva Brachas that you're making on Thursday night. So in your mind, they're specifically designated not for Shabbos use. Does that put a mukta status? Is that being makta in the verb form, designating away from yourself this food item for not now, not for Shabbos? So the answer to that is, it is mutter. It is permitted to touch those petit fours, those whatever else, whatever other frozen food items, even if you did designate them specifically for another time, it is not mukta. And everything that we said about raw food items on Yom Tif, when you're allowed to cook, so all those things, of course, are not mukta at all. Noodles are not mukta, barley is not mukta, raw beans are not mukta, flour is not mukta, Duncan Hines mixes are not mukta on Yom Tif. And that will basically finish today's discussion of the applications of mukta machmas gufo. And we'll take questions now.